Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, author of the Prayer Prescription Series and creator of Uprooting Our Fear of Death, Bringing It Out of the Closet, a Google Hangout webinar series. My guest this evening is Megan McCrary, author of Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Styles of Yoga. Joining me now is Megan. Hello, Megan.
Hi, how are you? I'm happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy that you are here. This is so exciting because yoga has certainly come into the mainstream here in America, which is something that back when we were all doing it in the 60s and 70s, it certainly seemed like a remote possibility at that time. How long have you been a yoga practitioner?
You know, I've been practicing for about 10 years, teaching for almost 7. So it's been interesting. I know my grandmother was actually doing yoga in the 70s, and I remember going to class with her and thinking, oh, Lord, this is for old ladies, and never wanting to try it again. And then it came back up in my early 20s and totally blew my mind. And I absolutely fell in love, and it was really sort of anchor that helped me navigate, you know, that mid-quarter crisis of coming out of college and stuff.
Yeah. Well, probably midlife is hitting people a lot earlier than it used to.
Oh, yeah, the quarter-life crisis.
The quarter-life for crisis, yes.
Not knowing so what to do with myself when the partying was done.
Exactly. So tell us about... You go through all the yoga practices in your book, and they're all very fascinating. And tell us about each, you know, briefly about each practice that you have researched so thoroughly.
Oh, wow. Okay, so in the book, there's 7 main styles, beginning with Ashtanga yoga, which is one of the main founding styles. Ashtanga and Iyengar, Kripalu, Kundalini sort of became the foundation of all the other yoga practices that came on. And so Ashtanga is the flow, is the one breath per movement, what we call a vinyasa, which means breathing movement system. It's fast, it's vigorous, it's sweaty. The Ashtanga series, they practice the same sequence of poses. There's about 4 of them. And you practice the same series until you advance to the next. Now, out of Ashtanga, you got your power yogas, your flow yogas, your vinyasa yogas, which all use the strong ujjayi breath and the breathing movement system, but the sequences are all creative. So that's what's cool about that. Then you have Iyengar yoga, which is what I would call alignment-based. So they're very concerned with the placement and the spatial relationship between the bones of your limbs and how you're using the muscles. And that's a more methodical approach where you're going to learn something, try it in the pose, back out of the pose, learn the next element, go back into the pose. So it's not quite as dynamic. It's a little bit longer hold, and you're expected to be a student. You want you there to learn. Kundalini yoga is very interesting. It's dealing with the energetic body and that chakra system that everybody is starting to recognize, the colors up the center channel. And they do fast, sort of rapid, repetitive movements. Then they'll rest. So you'll do a fast, what's called a kriya. You'll do an exercise, and then you'll rest about 4 or 5 minutes. And you'll just notice the energetic effects of that kriya. let's see, we got Bikram yoga, which everybody wants to know about. It's that hot yoga. Bikram itself is also a set series. It's about 90-minute practice, 105-degree heat, 40% humidity, and it's done on carpet, which a lot of people don't realize. But out of Bikram yoga, you got your hot yoga. It's your core power hot yoga. That again, they have their own sequencing but use the elements of a heated room. Integral yoga is another one that came around in the 60s and 70s, and that is interesting because it's a combination. It's an integrative practice. So in yoga, we have the branch of hatha yoga, which is the physical yoga. Styles fall under the branch of hatha yoga. Then you have your karma yoga, your devotional chanting, your prayer. You have your yana yoga, your self-study, the study of scriptures. You have raja yoga, meditation. Integral yoga brings all of those other things into the practice. So it's not going to just be physical poses. You're going to meditate. You're going to chant. You're going to breathe, seated breathing exercises. So that's a really well-rounded presentation of the overall yoga tradition. Kripalu yoga is really big back in the East, and that's the yoga of compassion. So Kripalu means compassion, and that system is it's really integrated American psychology and self-help and different aspects, and it's all about empowering the practitioner to move through some of these stored traumas and stuck tensions in the body. Jivamukti yoga is out in New York, and it's becoming quite popular. It's the newest yoga included in the main styles, and they are all about the yoga of sound and asana. So they play amazing songs. They use spoken word. They use all these different elements to create an overall experience in the class. Let me see. I think I missed one. We got Ashtanga, Kripalu, Iyengar, Kundalini, Bikram, Ashtanga. Oh, no, I think that was it. And then the rest of the rest is 10 more chapters or 10 more styles that just get like 2 pages each, and those are really interesting. So we really do have this amazing landscape of yoga across the United States of all these different experiences available to us.
You know, you talk about distinction, you know, you go through the distinctions between all of these different disciplines, but it seems like there's more similarities than distinctions from just reading through everything. You know what I'm saying? It just seems like there are, even Hatha yoga has been so misunderstood as being some sort of exercise when it really isn't, and it never has been really. From the practitioners who have used it, it's always been to those who have practiced it deeply, much more than a physical exercise.
Oh yeah, it would be hard for me to imagine hatha yoga, which is the practice of poses and what we're doing so much of in the classroom and on our mat. You know, if you've ever done it, it's not just a physical experience, and you know that because emotions arise. You know that because you have a different energy after. You know because it's mind. So it really is a comprehensive, holistic way of working the body out that brings in all five bodies in yoga. You have your energy body, you have your physical body, your emotional body, your intellectual body, and your spiritual body. And there's no way whether or not you aim to, without affecting all those things, because that's what the science of yoga was designed to do.
Well, it's interesting because if we're going to love our body, people think mostly in terms of the physical body. But as you just described, the body is so much more than the physical. So when we take on the challenge of really loving our body, which is how we can become, I think, self-realized, and how we can become happy people is to really, really understand and love our bodies. Well, that takes on much more than the physical, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and I can speak personally to this because, you know, as a woman in America, I battle with, and as a yoga teacher in Los Angeles, I'll battle with body issues. And, you know, I think in my head, if I, you know, just get fit and lose those 5 extra pounds, then I won't have insecurities about my body. And that's simply not true. No matter how fit or thin or fantastic I look outwardly, it's not really the issue of body image. The issue is my emotional body and my energetic body, where there's blocks revolving around what I think is, you know. So, I mean, I think we all, and women should notice, it's like we don't necessarily feel better when we finally get that body we want that's just in the physical.
Yeah, from personal experience, I have realized that even when I lose the weight, I may have the have in my mind's eye the body image of that when I had when I was a little heavier. So it's hard to catch up with the reality of where your body is at. It's really, really weird. And also, given the fact that in this country, we value youth, we value very thin people, and then certainly devalue aging and the wisdom that comes from that. So we have to almost just forget about what the culture here in America upholds and go for what is real.
Yeah, 100%. And yoga really teaches you to have gratitude for the body beyond just this physical appearance of what our culture values. So, you know, you think about it, you don't like your butt or something, but what does your butt do for you? It does so much. You sit on it, you dance with it, you move it. Like, can you start to anchor yourself in gratitude for your thighs instead of being like, oh, my thighs aren't the right size? What do your thighs do for you and enable you to do? Then the other thing yoga helps us do, I think, is we begin to understand that the body has an innate wisdom all its own. And I haven't been pregnant, but any woman who's gone through pregnancy knows this. The body just has an innate wisdom of its own, and we're ignoring it a lot of times and denying it, trying to fit into this mold that somehow became what we as a collective society decided to value. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then through pregnancy and everything, and through labor especially, the more a person surrenders to the body's ability to do exactly what it needs to do, and that would be true of all the yoga poses too, that, you know, you can flow with the experience as opposed to resisting. And, you know, depending on how much trauma a person has, getting back, is still staying with this labor and delivery metaphor, you know, the more trauma a woman has, the harder it is to let go when the time comes for her to give birth.
100%.
And that would be a metaphor for giving birth, you know, for giving birth to your creative projects, to giving birth to your mental, emotional, spiritual, yeah, body and all it's capable of achieving.
Mm-hmm. Yoga's and in comes yoga, right? Because yoga, those traumas, what we call sort of malas, are like stains, or, you know, just undigestible stuff. It gets stuck in your body, and the yoga poses, not only are they designed to create flexibility and strength and balance, they're energetically designed to unlock those places where we store those traumas. So people are actually quite shocked when they find themselves crying in the middle of a yoga pose, and it's because you've released those stored traumas. And as we know, from pregnancy to even how we experience our own reality, those perceptions and traumas are constantly creating a haze over how we experience things. So yoga is a way of getting those out so you can view through the lens of who you are, your true self, without those stains and traumas and perceptions in the way.
Before we go any further, Megan, I just want to emphasize your website. And the main website that you would be sending people to is at www.meganmccrary, which is M-E-A-G-A-N. Are these capital M-E-A-G-A-N, capital M?
Maybe yeah, but if you just matter. Type in all lowercase, it'll come. I don't think it matters in the domain.
Okay. So meaganmccrary.com. And do you have a list of people can sign up for the stuff?
Yes,
you
I'm
have a
working
blog?
On. I have a blog. I have a blog. Well, it's interesting. I designed my website. I just got my website all designed, and I'm working out the final kinks. And I need the last thing I need to put up there is a subscription button. But do check out the website because that's where you'll find places to buy the book. You'll find information about me. You can read my blog. But just to stay really up to date with everything, my radio shows, I'll put this on, is my web, my Facebook page, Megan McCrary Yoga on Facebook. And that's where I'm constantly updating with my schedule and where I'm subbing and where my workshops are coming and, you know, my appearances and things like that. So that's the best place to stay very up to date.
And you need to have, not that you, I don't know why I'm giving you advice, but anyway, you do need to have a opt-in box there so you can build your list.
Yes.
So we can,
I know,
you know, come on. Yeah. As you said, you were doing that. That's very cool. So anyway, I don't have time to go to a yoga class. So how, is it really possible to go online and take yoga classes?
It is very possible. So my caveat with that is that yoga is a repetitive exercise, meaning the poses you're doing, you're going to do four or five times, like down dog. You do down dog a lot of times in class. And if you're practicing mm-hmm. yoga more than once a week, you're doing down dog lots of times during the week. Now, the way you do a pose can eventually harm your body. It could also heal your body. So if you're doing a pose and it's not optimal for your body and you haven't been shown and told why you need to bend your knees, for instance, in like a down dog if you have tight hamstrings, mm-hmm. you can develop what's called a slow motion injury, which people don't actually relate to their yoga practice. So while online I'm all for it, it's great, it would be beneficial to have at least been in front of a teacher to show you some of the poses that come up a lot and how you should be handling those for your body and your range of motion. But other than that, YogaGlow, GLO.com, I like them because they also have a lot of tutorials. And so they have mm-hmm. a lot of explaining. Here's how you do it and why. I really would suggest someone pay attention to those types of things before they just throw themselves into any online experience.
Mm-hmm. I also understand that if you are a member of Amazon Prime, you can go there and pick out some pretty cool yoga instruction. Somebody just told me about that last night.
Oh, I did not know
night.
That.
Yeah,
well, I'm
going
to have to check
cool.
that out. Maybe I need to talk to Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you have your own instruction on DVD or tape or digital?
You know, that's the website. You know, the book was a big thing, and that's done, and now I'm on to promotions. The website's done. I just led my second yoga retreat, and now the next thing I'm conquering is getting some online content, some teaching, some
yes.
tutorials, things like that, along with my subscription button.
That's great. Well, you know, it's all a process, and well, the more help you have, the better, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like in terms of all the yoga practices that you outline in your book, the one that emphasizes going with all of your strong emotions and really and acknowledging them and really feeling them without identifying with them would be the Kripala yoga. Do you think that all the yoga practices do this, or is there one that does it over the others?
You know, I would say there's more commonality. So if you were to really get into your yoga practice, that could happen, you know, in
yeah.
any style. However, I do know that I wouldn't say it's a system per se as more as a teacher's personal philosophy. But I've had students come up to me and say, a teacher said, this isn't a place for tears. This isn't a place for your emotions. Leave those at the door. So
mm-hmm.
they're not going to get that emotional release that would allow to happen. Kripalu specifically has exercises called Riding the Wave of Sensation that addresses how to release stored trauma. Another one that does it really exceptionally well is forest yoga. So while you're going to get that in all the styles, if you're really after some emotional healing and some breakthroughs, the philosophy and the underlying structure of Kripalu Yoga is really where it's at. And the minute Kripalu Yoga teachers learn those techniques and learn how to empower people and help people move through traumas, and then they actually go on to teach other styles of yoga. So, you know, Kripalu is sort of a philosophy you could actually apply to any yoga practice because it's dealing with the psychosis and personal empowerment and responsibility.
Yes. And
but I loved that chapter.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating. And
especially in a society that fixes things, you know. It was like when I was a child, I was very emotional and I cried a lot. Well, it was like, there's something wrong with her. You go to therapy. You know, if you have a headache, you take a Tylenol. It's like there's something to be said for allowing those things to actually pass through us without having to fix them.
I think that is a beautiful thing to make a distinction about. To think that we have to fix everything really is a relief to realize that we can't. We didn't cause it. We can't fix it. And to just relax into it.
Mm-hmm. And then there's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing to be fixed. Emotions are a perfectly beautiful part. I mean, sadness is a part of our experience of being human.
And the more we feel it, the more human we become.
Yes.
Basically.
You know, and if you don't feel it, so, I'm now in my 30s, and I was always sent to therapy for crying and things, so I learned you don't cry. You'd be happy. So guess what?
Mm-hmm,
that's all in my body somewhere, and now I'm having to deal with it. It's not like it just goes away either.
No, it doesn't, does it? But it's hidden, and it's waiting to be released, basically.
Yeah, and you never know what's going to trigger it.
So what is your own daily yoga practice like?
You know, that's interesting because my yoga practice has had to take on some different variations. I'm a hypermobile, hyperflexible person, which everybody when they come to yoga say, oh, I can't do yoga, I'm not flexible enough. It's actually much easier to hurt yourself if you're hypermobile, hyperflexible. So I at one point wound up hurting my back because I can do very deep back bends. I can do the splits. I can do all of these flexible things that I just didn't have the strength to support. So my physical yoga practice had to back way off. And I only take a class maybe two or three times a week. And then I have to do strength training. I have to do Pilates. I have to do other things that are building the container to support my flexibility. For a while there, I wasn't even getting to practice physical asana, which was a blessing in disguise because I got to develop my seated practice. So in the morning, my favorite sort of routine when I'm feeling really good and it goes hand in hand, is to get up in the morning. I do about 5 to 8 sun salutations just to get my get to cat cow, then I do my sun salutations. And then I like to sit for about 5 minutes doing alternate nostril breathing. It's called Nadi Shodhana. Then I spend 5 minutes, sometimes I chant and sometimes I just sit quietly. So it's about a 10-minute breathing meditation practice. And then immediately when I open my eyes, I make my gratitudes for the day. I write down my list of what I have to be grateful for. So that's you know, it takes about 15, 20 minutes, not very much time. And when I'm feeling the best about myself is when I'm doing that. And sometimes it doesn't get done first thing in the morning either, and I fall into that trap where it wasn't done, I can't do it. And now I'm realizing, you know what, if it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's still worth doing.
Right. So in other words, if you don't get it done in the morning, you don't beat yourself up.
You know what, because then all that led to me was that I didn't do it. And then the next day, it's like, I didn't do it yesterday. You know, it was this downward spiral. And I had to give myself a little more flexibility, a little more, I don't know, ease and compassion.
Yes. Well, that's what yoga is all about.
Yeah, and I think it's the hardest. Yeah. It's interesting in yoga because yoga tends to attract compassionate people. Mm-hmm. You know, although I was talking to a man yesterday who said he was not compassionate before he started yoga. But what I find, what I, especially in my classes, when I'm talking to students, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir a little bit. Like, you know, be nice to people. It's like, well, they obviously are. I think for me and a lot of people in yoga, the extending the compassion to yourself is really hard work. I think it's so much easier to extend it to other people, to forgive other people, to acknowledge that other people are human. I think really a lot of our real work is extending that kindness and that compassion and that forgiveness to our own selves.
And also to realize that the other person whom you are forgiving is a mirror of yourself. And that makes that makes it easier to forgive yourself when you think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what yoga also is about, right? It's realizing why we take on these different forms and shapes, and the duality of manifested existence is awesome because we get to experience and see and participate in all these different things. There truly, really isn't any duality. We're not dual. We're all the same. It's all one.
Exactly. Which is where that whole thing with the mirror comes in. We are all connected. It's just really a flowing kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So how can a person decide which yoga practice is best for her or him?
You know, it's such a personal decision. And it's also very easy to get caught up. Oh, this is super popular right now. This celebrity is doing this. You know, I'm going to be leading a workshop with a colleague of mine up in San Francisco in March, and it'll be a little bit about the book, but it's going to be you're responsible for choosing the practice for you. And I would say start with your physical needs always. Do you have limitations? Are you coming off an injury? Do you need to lose weight? Do you need a style that's more gentle? Starting with the physical needs is going to point you in at least a direction. So you can know if you need more individual attention. If you're fine in a group with 50 people and you're going to sweat on somebody else's mat, you know, those sorts of things. Comfort, personal comforts, right? So are you going to be comfortable in a room of 50 or would you prefer a smaller classroom? Would you prefer a more personalized approach? Emotional needs are really big to me. So I need a teacher who's more nurturing. I grew up playing competitive basketball with many tyrant coaches, and my nervous system can't handle that anymore. Or do you need someone who's going to sort of drill you through poses? Intellectually, do you want to be a student? Are you somebody who wants to know exactly how and why the poses are done a certain way? Or you just kind of want to get in there and listen to music and flow with your breath a little bit? You know, both are very valid. Both are very different experiences. I would say just think about what you're trying to get out of your yoga practice. You know, if you're there to get sweat, go to a sweaty yoga. If you're there to connect spiritually, go to something that's going to offer you a little more ways in meditation and self-study. You know, if you're there for community, find a studio, find a style that really promotes community.
Well, the community part of it is very important. But That takes a lot of, you know, dedication and time, but it's really worth it, for sure.
Yeah.
Back in the '70s,
showing up.
Well,
showing up to the same class at the same time is where it's at. Like, even if it's once a week, if you just make it to that one class at one time, you see the same people see you, and before you know it, you feel like you belong.
Right. So to think about the wonderful foundation that has been laid in this country, you do a beautiful job in your book of laying that, of having us see what has brought us to where we are today with yoga and the Vivekananda in 1893 and Yogananda coming to America in 1920 and staying here with his Self-Realization Fellowship. And then, of course, if people really want to read the most incredible spiritual classic of all time, Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi certainly is that book. And that was something that I was raised with that book. And then back and then in the 70s, we turned to the Indra Divi's book, Yoga for Americans. And I'm seriously considering buying that book again because that it really does. It does a good job of making you feel like you can do the positions and do the breath. And it's very well outlined. And I did not realize how she, is that a she or a he?
Indra, she's a she.
Yeah. How she.
She's a godmother of yoga.
Yeah. Yeah, the godmother of yoga. It's so fascinating to read that. It's really a wonderful book. I love your book. It just gives us a beautiful
after reading,
a beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, after reading that chapter, my agent she had felt the same way about Indra Devi, and she was like, "Oh my gosh, I think maybe your next book needs to just be on her." You know, because she was the first woman who was trained in yoga, who was allowed in the yoga ashram. And she forced the teacher to teach her. I mean, she was quite the woman.
Yeah.
She brought yoga to Russia when they were convinced it was a cult. She brought it to the Kremlin. I mean, she was really a big part of what the globalization of yoga.
Wow. So are you considering writing that book? Does that book make you feel passionate? Yeah.
Yeah, it does, you know, and I like the woman aspect and the yoga aspect and these stories that revolve around her, you know, she just taught a loving-kindness philosophy, and she ended up in Argentina for most of her later years. And yogis and non-yogis alike just adored her. She touched so many lives, even outside of the yoga, that the accounts of these people are really heartfelt and emotional. It's very cool.
Yes, it's amazing to think that how women were not really involved in the practice until she came along. I guess she opened it up to the people in Hollywood, which is, of course, where it all begins, this kind of thing.
And then Mae West, and they were all doing yoga with her. And then the interesting thing, so that was, you know, 60s, 70s, and you had Ram Dass leading pilgrimages and people setting up ashrams and taking vows of celibacy, and everybody, the American youth that was after this altered state of consciousness, whether you know, they were using psychedelics, and then here came the yogis that said you can reach these drug-free. But they were still sort of trying on, you know, Indian yoga, like, taking on all of the traditions. And what wound up happening is in the ashrams, particularly the Kripalu ashram, they began to assimilate all of these traditions, Indian yoga traditions, with psychology, American psychology, American self-help, and it became it just assimilated, and it kept growing, and with every new generation of yogis, it became, I hate to say, even say more American, it just, things were added to it, and that's just what the swamis and gurus, they sent over their disciples to come, because they knew that not only did America need this stuff, but they would learn something also in return. And yoga is this living tradition that's constantly changing and evolving and incorporating and becoming. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. Do you think that where yoga is now in America, that there's been some dumbing down that has occurred? But as people get involved in it, they deepen their own awareness of it probably.
Exactly. So you always hear this, the commercialization of yoga is ruining yoga. We're watering down the tradition of yoga. I was blessed enough to have the opportunity to interview some very senior teachers. We're talking Ashtanga teachers that have been here 30, 40 years, Iyengar teachers. And that's the last question I asked all of them. And almost resoundingly, they said, they're fine with it. Because you know what? It's getting more people in the door. It's not like those those deeper, unwatered down philosophies and disciplines, and that's still all there, completely intact. More people are getting in the door, so more people are actually going to wind up at those deeper meanings. It's there.
Right.
But what's the problem with getting more people moving and breathing consciously?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's some sort of excuse, and to dimensionalize the experience to say that that the practice of yoga has been dumbed, quote, you know, so-called dumbed down. But in reality, it is the people who do it. It's my responsibility to see the depth of it. Now, I was brought over the last several years. And since 1993, I've been doing Kriya Yoga, taught by Paramahansa Yogananda, doing the energization exercises, which he himself, you know, had devised to do prior to the yoga or the Kriya Yoga. And those were really amazing. I mean, they're not really yoga per se that we know and love and have practiced for years, but it is more of, well, you describe it in your book very well about how the energization exercises work. And it's a very fascinating discipline. Kriya Yoga itself is everything that they say it is. It is truly amazing.
It's a science. It's an exact science to help you expand your consciousness and to have a direct experience of consciousness, of energy. I'm excited that you even mentioned it because I haven't actually practiced much Kriya Yoga. I've done the Kriyas with Kundalini Yoga, but not Yogananda's energization exercises.
Yes.
And I'm fascinated by them because who feels everything, the energy exercises really blow my mind. And I would like to go. Do you practice at a self-realization center?
Yeah,
fellowship?
So what happens is you enroll in the lessons, and then for a year, you go through the lessons, and then at the end of that year, they teach you the energization exercises through in that first year, and then you get initiated into Kriya Yoga after the year is up. And then you can just keep working on deepening, as it were, deepening the practice.
Wow. So you've gone through your initiation?
Yes, and that was back in 1993.
And you said you
illness.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a serious illness that brought me to it. Not to say that my mother was deeply involved with Yogananda, not that she did the Kriya or anything, but she had the autobiography of a yogi. She bought the book for all of her friends. And so I was very familiar with it, but to think I was not familiar with this whole amazing science, as you say, and the amazing spiritual tradition that Yogananda brought to this country until I did those lessons. And the lessons are just fascinating. Each lesson is you're supposed to – they come in the mail one lesson at a time, one lesson at a time each week. They don't all come at once, you know, so that you have a whole week to really have the lesson kind of become integrated into your being, as it were. And
yes. So that's really how yoga was originally taught and learned. Like the Ashtanga series, which I was, it's the set series with the faster movements. You worked one-on-one with your yoga teacher. He gave you one pose. You worked on it. Then you went away. You worked on it. You came back. And then he showed him you could do that pose. And he gave you another pose. And then you worked on it. You went away. And you came back. So yoga was originally intended to be learned how you were learning Kriya Yoga.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Weekly, slowly, integratively, under the guidance of a teacher. You know, very interesting because I see people, I've never done yoga before, and they'll throw themselves into a power yoga class and, you know, wonder why they can't keep up, wonder why they feel diminished, wonder why they feel hurt, you know. Because it's not the way yoga is meant to learn. You need to take a basic class. You need to take a foundational class. You need to know what you're doing before you get going really fast.
Exactly. Fascinating. It is a something that needs to be almost, if you're as you learn it with your breathing. You know, you need to breathe with it. As just like yoga is, the breath is so important in all these wonderful practices. And it was, the same would be true in the way that you learn it, through breath, mm-hmm. one breath at a time, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know what's wow. so funny is, you know, in the West, just when, like, the Polynesians, or when the Westerners arrived in Hawaii, we were howlers because we were breathing fast and rapid through our mouth, and we
right.
don't take those breaths down into the lower lobes. It's almost like, you know, we breathe like that in the West, and that's how we wanted to do our yoga. We're like, I got to learn it all now. When you slow the breath down. It slowed the process down. All the teachers I spoke to were very, very clear. Yoga is a lifelong practice. It is meant to
yes.
support you at all different stages of your life. So don't freaking be in a rush. Don't blow yourself out. Don't worry about getting to the certain pose. It's life. It's a process. It's the path. There's no end to get to.
Yeah, it's all in the present. It really does teach you to be in the present moment for sure, which is where everything is. And it's what Americans, especially with this fast-paced lifestyle, and there you are in Los Angeles. My heavens, talk about fast-paced.
Oh.
It must be unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah, but I have a hard time in L.A. There's, you know, not only is it fast-paced, there's just, you know, here I just got back from Tulum, Mexico, and coming back, my nervous system almost always shuts down. I get really sleepy because there's so much stimulus. It's constant. It's almost difficult not to be in a fast pace because everything around you is going now, 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 and this, and now, and read this tweet and that tweet, and then, and then. It's like the
yeah.
stimulus. So yoga is about going inside so that we can rejuvenate and restore our nervous system. So that
right.
we can handle Los Angeles.
I guess you probably won't be there forever, is my guess, just by listening to
no,
what
no,
you
no.
just said.
No, it's great for now, and it's great for the yoga and everything, but it's definitely not for me long term.
Right, right. Well, we've come to the end of this wonderful time together. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I have been visiting your yoga page here on Facebook, and have invited about 100 people. So I'm hoping that they come.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for all
You're
your
welcome.
Advice.
Oh, I enjoyed talking with you. It's, you know, having a conversation is more my style than having an interview. So thank you for having a conversation. It was beautiful.
Yeah, this was a really good time.
Thank you. And I hope you have a lovely afternoon there in Southern California. And we're heading into an Arctic freeze, so wish us well. And,
okay, good luck.
Thank you. I hope to talk with you again.
Okay, thank you so much, Kate.
Bye-bye.
Bye.